Now let's go back to the beginning in order to understand the problem, or what is the idea of Nomadic Sufa, which is obviously a very fundamental and important term. If you recall, we remember that it all starts off in the fact that the Ribbono Shel'olam is perfect, right? He's Sholem, perfect. So therefore, it follows from that that his acts are also perfect. If he is perfect, obviously it follows that all parts of him are perfect. His Maisim are also perfect. Now we know that the Ribbono Shel'olam, the entire reason why the Ribbono Shel'olam created the Bria is to be mated, to do good, to give beings outside of himself a state of pleasure, or a feeling, a well-being, or whatever, a pleasurable state, or a good state. That's the whole point of the entire creation, is that reason. So then it follows that the Hatova that the Ribbono Shel'olam wants to do, this goodness that the Ribbono Shel'olam wants to do, itself must be perfect, right? If we say that he is perfect and his acts are perfect, it follows that if the Ribbono Shel'olam wants to be mative, then this Hatova, this doing good, is also going to be perfect. That's called Hatova Shlema. That the good that the Ribbono Shel'olam is going to be giving is obviously also going to be perfect and not imperfect. Now, once we understand the rule of Hatova Shlema, then several things become dictated. In other words, if the Ribbono Shel'olam is going to do something, then it's going to be in the best possible way, which of course is really perfect in terms of the Ribbono Shel'olam. Then two ideas unfold as a result of that. The first idea is, what will be that toiv that people will get? What is that toiv that people will get in Olam Haba? What is Olam Haba really all about? And that, of course, the answer to that was, is that the greatest perfect source of pleasure, of course, is the Ribbono Shel'olam. Since he is perfect, therefore he obviously is the greatest source of pleasure, since everything is really contained within him. And the Ribbono Shel'olam as a source of pleasure would of course be the greatest amount of pleasure, quantitative toiv. It's the greatest kind of pleasure, qualitative, in terms of kinds of pleasure. The Ribbono Shel'olam would be of course the greatest kind of pleasure. And a third idea is that the Ribbono Shel'olam would be that kind of a toiv or pleasure, obviously, that does not lead to any boredom. You don't get bored. In Olam Hazeh, I don't care what pleasure you engage in, after a while you get tired of it and get bored of it. I don't care what it is. The Ribbono Shel'olam, obviously, in himself, since he is perfect, is that kind of a being that if he is the source of the pleasure, there's no boredom that comes out of it. So therefore, in quantity, the Ribbono Shel'olam is the greatest source of pleasure. In quality, he's the greatest source of pleasure. And also in the sense that there's no boredom in that kind of pleasure that comes from the Ribbono Shel'olam. So therefore the Ribbono Shel'olam decided that he would be the source of pleasure. Therefore a person, an individual, an Odom, experiencing the Ribbono Shel'olam himself would be that pleasurable state. So Hatova Shlema therefore demands, okay, doing good in the best possible way, that he will be the source of pleasure, because that is the best possible pleasure of all. The next idea of Hatova Shlema is that, okay, good, then the Ribbono Shel'olam is the source of pleasure. Very good. But wait a minute. If the Ribbono Shel'olam gives himself as that pleasure, in the sense that you experience God directly, or rather, you experience the Ribbono Shel'olam, or some aspect of whatever, if that's going to be the pleasure, but there's something that's ma'akev, something that prevents the pleasure from being experienced by the person. And that is, a person automatically feels a certain sense of shame when he receives something for nothing. There's a certain sense of shame when the person, again, receives something for nothing. When a person does not earn, he doesn't strive for something, when it's not a result of his actions, and a person just receives toiv, even if it be the greatest source of pleasure, the person after a while begins experiencing a certain feeling called shame. And the technical hashkofa term for that is nama diksufa. Nama means bread. Dikisufa means shame. It's called bread of shame. Means that if a person gets something from an individual, bread in this case, for nothing, then there's a certain amount of shame or embarrassment that he experiences. So, Hatova Shleimo would demand that a person receive the Ribbono Shel Olam as his Toiv, right? But there's that ikuv, that impediment, that obstacle for the full pleasure, which is the kind of feeling a person gets when he feels, when he receives something for nothing. Nam niksufa. So the Ribbono Shel Olam has to remove, or masakein, correct, that nam niksufa. So therefore what he does is he has you work for it. So when you work for it, you get exactly what you work for. If you work for, if you did mitzvahs, and you are megali yehudei, which is the whole idea of it, then you get the exact amount of unity of God that you reveal through your mitzvahs. So the task and the reward are the same. So the Olam Hazeh was created as a tikkun of Naam Diksufa. We can now use that sophisticated term. That Olam Hazeh, which means this world, which is the Mokum Favoida, the place of work, it was created so you can remove this Naam Diksufa. Because if there was no such thing as Naam Diksufa, then God would have created Olam Haba right away. There's no need for an Olam Hazeh. What do we need all these miseries for? This tremendous amount of difficulties and energies and so on. You give the person, the whole purpose of the creation is to you, so give it him right away. So the point is that Olam Hazeh had to be created. In other words, a person must go via Olam Hazeh to get to Olam Haba in order to remove the embarrassment of shame that comes from receiving something for nothing, no matter how great that toiv, that something you receive. But the question, of course, which is asked is, wait a minute, why does a person have in the first place this Naam Diksufa, this shame when he receives something for nothing? Obviously the Ribbono Shel Olam created that too. So then let God not create Naam Diksufa, the ability of man to receive shame, and he won't feel shame, and then give him Olam Haba. Why, you know, obviously if you create the problem, then you have to have a tikkun, Olam Hazeh. Don't create the problem and you don't need a tikkun. Don't make problems and you don't need solutions. This is the question that people ask. This is the question that people ask in terms of Naam Niksufa. Don't create Naam Niksufa in a person. You don't need Olam Hazeh. You're giving a person Olam Haba right away. So what's really going on? The idea is that you can enjoy the Hatova, the Toiv, the Ribbono Shel Olam wants to give you, without any shame, you wouldn't need Olam Hazeh. You don't need it. The whole point of Olam Hazeh is only to masaken Naam Diksufa, to remove their embarrassment by working for it. But if you would not be embarrassed in the first place, you don't need Olam Hazeh. There's no point in having Bechira. It's irrelevant. Now, so therefore that is a very difficult question to answer, very profound, and it really is at the root of almost literally the beginnings of the universe as we know it. I'm going to try to give some meaningful understanding, although the real understanding, of course, is probably hidden from all men. But I'll try to at least deal with it in some sense where we can understand something of what's going on. Okay. But what I want to do, before we answer this question, or rather on the way, let's understand what kisufo is. When you feel embarrassed or shameful, what are you really feeling? Let's understand the emotion itself, you know, of what you're really feeling. Let's take a person, okay? Let's take a poor man. Poor man goes around, he's begging, okay? What does this person really feel? He's obviously always getting handouts from everybody, okay? What about a person who lives off welfare checks, okay? He also has a certain sense of embarrassment. He's always living on the largesse of the United States government, you know, which may or may not be forthcoming, depending on whose administration you're in, you know? But in any case, these people, of course, receive a certain amount of embarrassment as a result of the fact that they are always totally or connected with or dependent on the United States government or whatever. What kind of feeling do they experience? Well, what they begin experiencing is a certain feeling of dependency, right? They're very dependent, right? They're dependent on the person giving in them the toiv or whatever. Besides the dependency, they also have another feeling. They feel impotent. Impotent. That even if they have needs, they can't meet those needs. They got to walk over and ask you. You have to meet their needs. No, they are impotent to go out and earn their own living. Right? That's a certain feeling of helplessness. Failure, but what you get is you have a certain sense of impotency. You can't do. Impotent means to do, the power to do. obviously, besides the fact that they're dependent, right, on the people giving them money, they also feel impotent. In other words, they cannot solve their dependency. Okay, so there's two very powerful feelings that a person experiences: the sense of dependency and the sense of impotency. What is that really saying to a person? That's a tremendous statement of the limitation of his being. I mean, that limits you. There's nothing greater that limits you than the fact that you are dependent on something else, and you cannot even solve that dependency. You can't get rid of it in any way. That's a tremendous limitation in being. That's a refutation of some kind of feelings that you have about yourself, the reverse, which is omnipotence or whatever. As such, as the fact that it's a limitation in your being, there's a certain detraction of being. You begin to feel what's called inferior. That's it. Now we're getting to the emotion. But I'm showing you the logic of how you get to that emotion. Inferiority is a loss or sense of being. Nobody. You know what nobody means? N-O-B-O-D-Y. Nobody. There's no body here. That's why it's called nobody. Non-existence. There's nothing here. I want to feel like a somebody, right? Somebody, and there's something here. So in other words, as a result of the fact that there's dependency and impotency, okay, which is a limitation on being, that detracts from your being, and what you begin feeling is what's called feelings of inferiority, a sense of nobody, okay? And of course, in other words, what you begin losing, of course, is your sense of self-respect, self-esteem, self-worth. All these feelings mean the same thing, the sense that you feel like somebody, and that's what you don't have. So, the idea of kisufo or shame, when you receive something for nothing, is really the feelings of inferiority that results from the fact. The fact that you're receiving something for nothing really creates feelings of inferiority in you. That's your shame. So as a result of the fact that you feel like nothing, it's hard for you to face anybody. That's the shame that emerges, okay, from the fact that you are nobody. It's hard for you to face other people which you think are somebodies. So you have a sense of shame, okay? That's what kisufa really is. Kisufa is that sense of inferiority that comes from the fact that you are dependent and impotent at the same time. And it's brought out very well in the ideas of the beggar and the person who receives welfare. Okay, so we've understand what kisufa is. So back to the original question, what do you need kisufa? Give, enable man to receive something without this sense of inferiority of being, right? But now we can understand it deeper, clearer, more precise, what kisufa is. It's a loss or sense of self, being. You feel there's nothing there. Vahoraya, the proof is that you are dependent on other beings, and you can't even solve your needs or your dependency. Now, in order to begin to understand or answer the question, we really have to go into the idea of what is the neshama compared to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And you begin to see that once you have an understanding in those directions, then it'll be easier to understand the whole origin of Na'amid Kisufa. Because what's the question we're really asking? What is the origin of the feeling of Na'amid Kisufa? Where does it emanate from? So right now we're assuming that the emanation of the feeling of Na'amid Kisufa is from who? From the Ribbono Shel Olam. So he created it, let him get rid of it. And then you won't feel embarrassed when you're dependent and you're impotent. There's no embarrassment. So that the Ribbono Shel Olam can give you all the toiv he wants, namely himself. So we're assuming the origin of Na'amid Kisufa, that emotional feeling of inferiority, is a created, which means it originates from the actions of the Ribbono Shel Olam in the creation. Therefore, we have a logical question. But wait a minute. Is that true? Is the feelings of Na'amid Kisufa originate in an act of the Ribbono Shel Olam? Perhaps not. Perhaps there's an ontological necessity for Na'amid Kisufa, which means that it exists not because the Ribbono Shel Olam created it. It's there. And the Ribbono Shel Olam must contend with it also. But how do we do such a zah? How can something be external to the Ribbono Shel Olam? And so on. Yeah. And it looks like any way we turn, we're going to get stuck. I'm merely showing you a possible direction for an answer. But if that's the answer, it's probably going to create more problems than an answer in the first place. What do you mean the Ribbono Shel Olam corrects and so on? What goes on? That's what I'm saying. We're in a very subtle area, a very deep area, and I'm merely offering attempt to give some kind of an answer. You know, what is the real answer, or what the real idea in terms of Naam Niksuf and Ribbono Shel Olam? Probably no one knows. But Naam Niksuf is so important to understand. Why? Because the whole Olam Hazeh is in response to Masakin Naam Niksufa. To correct Naam Niksufa, undo that feeling. That's the whole reason why you have Olam Hazeh. So you can imagine how significant the idea of Naam Niksufa. And of course, the reason why the Rebbeinu wants Masakin Naam Niksufa is because of HaTova Shleima. In other words, if Naam Niksufa is Masakin, you don't feel embarrassed anymore, then the reward that you get from the Rebbeinu will be perfect. There's no obstacles. So it's HaTova Shleima that started the problems in that sense. Since the Rebbeinu is made to be Shleimus, he gives perfectly. So therefore, he will be the reward, and he has to remove Naam Niksufa. And that's where the whole problem is. Okay. Let's try to solve this problem by understanding something of the nature of the Neshama and how it relates to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. There's an interesting statement in Chazal. The Chazal say that the Neshama is Chelik Elokai Mimal, that the Neshama is a part of God who is above, part of the one who's above. And the Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzer says Mamish. Really. I mean, it's not figurative, it's not poetic. There's a real meaning in that. Again, of course we don't understand what that means. God is not divisible. That's the whole idea of Achdus, Yichud, that he, his existence, his attributes and his acts are identical. There is no division at all. That's the idea of Poshut. He's a simple being with no division whatsoever. So now how in the world do you divide the Ribbono Shel Olam? Nobody knows. That's probably beyond conception, comprehension. But we can only deal with the words that Chazal say is every neshama is a chelik ulakai. In some idea, a neshama is a part of the Ribbono Shel Olam. In some facet. So therefore it comes out several very interesting ideas. If that's the case, then it comes out that every neshama has two ideas in it. It has what's called a nimtza, that part of the neshama which always was, because God always was. And there's a nivra, that part of the neshama which was created. You know, the neshama is like a dual. Some aspect of the neshama always was, just like God always was, because that's what a chelik means. To be part of something means to have the exact same attributes of that which you are a part of, right? And God always was, so the neshama always was. But then part of it, neshamas are a bria. They did not always exist. Part of it was not always. It was nivra. So the neshama has this duality of nivra, created aspect, and a nimtza, an always existential aspect, that which always existed. The question is what? How do we understand these aspects? Let's take a look at the idea of nivra. What was created? Very important to understand. Well, before the Ribbono Shel Olam created the universe, there were no neshamas. There was absolutely nothing. Okay, what the Ribbono Shel Olam did perhaps can be best understood in terms of an example. Let's take a look at a glass of water. Okay, you take the glass of water. Okay, and let's say you put your finger in it and you spray some water, or you pour the glass. What happens? So drops of water come out of the glass, right? What's the difference between the drop of water and the glass from which it emerged from? What's the difference? The glass, the substance of the water is the exact same thing as the glass it came from. It's the same chlima, the same substance. But what is different now from this drop of water? Not the shape. It is now distinct from the glass it came from. In other words, water, this water, which was used to be part of that glass, has now assumed an individuality different than the glass. It's a separateness. It's distinct from the glass that it came from. So it comes out that the substance itself is part of the glass of water, right? But it now achieves a new idea called an individuality, because it is different than the glass of water from which it came from, right? It's separate. It's distinct. That's the difference. In other words, so in choyme, the material substance is the same as the glass, but in tzura, in form, it is different. it achieves what's called a distinct identity as different from the glass of water. Okay? Let's take a look at a lake. Another example. You take a rock and you throw it in the middle of a lake. All of a sudden waves form, right? Now, you look at the waves itself, and there are many waves, you know, and each one you shape them, and then the next one, and so on. You know, there's one wave after the other wave. All waves have the same thing. They're all part of the lake. A wave is nothing more than a change in shape on the surface of the lake, right? So in substance-wise, they're all the same as a lake, every wave. But each one has now assumed an individual form. So each wave is distinct from the other in its identity. The form gives it a distinct identity. Each wave is different than the other wave, and the wave itself is different than the body of the lake, right? Those are sort of like crude examples of what it means to be part of the same substance, yet different, to achieve a new identity, a new kind of individuality, different than the body which you emerge from, okay? In a certain sense, that's what the neshama is also. The neshama is that aspect of the Ribono Shel Olam which has been individuated. Somehow, which no one has any hasaga, things became distinct from the Ribono Shel Olam, yet the Ribono Shel Olam is still poshut. God is still poshut, yet there's distinctions somehow within him, and the distinctions of his substance is the neshama itself. Again, I'm just using words because that's really what you can understand. The true meaning of this is beyond comprehension, because if I don't know what the nature of the Ribono Shel Olam is, how can I know the nature of what happens around them or whatever? But this is the idea that the neshama is an individual identity with the same substance as the Ribono Shel Olam. No difference. That's what Chelik L'Kaim Imal means, okay? But it achieves a certain identity, okay? Now the question is, what is that identity that it achieves? So in other words, until now I've illustrated the idea of a lake or the drop of water, gone into the idea that there's a thing can be different from something else in form but not in substance, right? But it's still distinct, different, separate or whatever than the thing which emerged from. The same thing happened with the neshama. But how do we recognize that distinction between the neshama and the Ribono Shel Olam? The answer is the concept called self. What the Ribono Shel Olam did, or rather, if you look at yourself, you realize that there are certain interesting things you automatically do and you've never thought about. You are a self. Means there's something there looking out at me, right? There's something in your body there looking at me, right? In other words, it comes out that what the Ribono Shel Olam created was a self, some individual distinct thing or identity. What you want to call it, an I, an ego, a self, an identity, whatever you want to call it. There's something there that is different than the Ribono Shel Olam. Now this self is aware, it has an awareness, that's an act. The self is aware, that's a second idea, of itself. In other words, the self is aware of its own self as a true existent being. So there are three ideas here. The self, which is aware of itself. You know, it becomes the object of its own awareness, which a man can do. So therefore, the Russian created that self with the capacity to be aware of itself as an independent being. Now, the self is aware of itself, right? But also, after it becomes aware of itself as a being that has existence, it sees other beings, like the Ribono Shel Olam, and other things, right? And it realizes that it as a being is different or distinct from other beings that it perceives. You see? That is the idea of individuation. The idea that there is actually a different identity or self that can look back, that number one, is aware of itself as existing and looks at the Ribono Shel Olam and understands that God exists, but his existence is different than mine. Or he is not me. That's the idea of distinction. He is not me. This is what the Ribono Shel Olam created. That is the neshama who in substance is like the Ribono Shel Olam, but an identity is distinct from the Ribono Shel Olam. So, the self part of the neshama is the nivra. There was no such thing before God somehow differentiated neshamas from himself. There was no such thing before. But the Bria consists in the idea of individuating selves as distinct from the Ribbono Shel Olam. But even when he does that, these selves have the same substance as he. Right? Okay, so this is what we see. Now we now have some understanding of the neshama and how it relates with the Ribbono Shel Olam. So we realize that the self is that nivra of the neshama. That's how it's distinct from God. And how it's part of the Ribbono Shel Olam in the sense that it has the same substance. So the idea of the drop of water is a very good idea. So therefore, like the drop of water is the same substance as the glass of water, but is distinct because it now has a different identity, different than the water. Of course, the drop of water has no self, which it realizes and so on. That's only the neshama. But the same idea of distinction of entity. What we realize are certain interesting ideas, that it is the realization of a neshama and its connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam that is Gilui Yehudai. That's the whole idea. A revelation of the unity of God. That's what unity means, that the Ribbono Shel Olam is the only thing that exists. So it is that exact feeling that the neshama begins being margish, its makor, its source, that is the hanor, the toiv that the Ribbono Shel Olam gives the neshama. You see? But you understand it better in terms of identity. But the idea is still there, that there is a separate, distinct identity from the Ribbono Shel Olam and the neshama, and therefore it is now an independent being. Hold on. Now, let's go further. Once we've achieved that understanding, then if we assume that the substance of the neshama is of the Ribbono Shel Olam, or part of the Ribbono Shel Olam, or whatever, so obviously those attributes that the Ribbono Shel Olam have, the neshama will have too, right? What are some of the ideas in the Ribbono Shel Olam himself? What are the key ideas? Number one, that the Ribbono Shel Olam is perfect. What does perfection mean? He is completely independent of everything. There's no deficiency, so obviously there's a complete independence of every concept available. Because he's perfect, and perfect means there's no deficiency. He doesn't need anything outside of him. Okay? So that's the first major idea in the Ribbono Shel Olam. That God is perfect means this, he is completely independent. In addition, the Ribbono Shel Olam is a kol yochel. He is completely potent. He can do anything he wants. That's a kol yochel. He's omnipotent. That's again the second fundamental idea in the Ribbono Shel Olam. Okay? In addition, the Ribbono Shel Olam is a noisein. He gives. He doesn't makabel. He doesn't receive. Because if somebody receives, it means that he has a deficiency, and therefore he can take. Obviously, he who is perfect does not receive, he gives. So he's got that attribute called giving, nisei, mashpia. Okay? That is the idea of the Ribbono Shel Olam. If that's the case, then the neshama, which is a chelik of the Ribbono Shel Olam, has the same feelings, or ontological, existential feelings, right? It has, you know, it feels this by virtue of its being automatically. Since its substance of the Ribbono Shel Olam, it also feels independent, right? Omnipotent, right? And has this true sense of being. If that's the case, so when you take the neshama, and the neshama, because it's distinct from the Ribbono Shel Olam, what does that mean? It means that it's now separate from the Ribbono Shel Olam, right? If something is separate from the Ribbono Shel Olam, and if only God is perfect, then it follows that the neshama becomes imperfect by virtue of the separation, automatically. Only God is perfect. To be perfection is to be God himself. As soon as the Ribbono Shel Olam individuates a separate, distinct entity, that entity is confused. Why? Because his substance says that he is independent and perfect, right? Independent, potent, perfect, yet, but the nivra, the entity which is distinct from the Ribbono Shel Olam immediately is aware that it's not the Ribbono Shel Olam, it is imperfect, not Sholem, right? So it automatically has this, what's called this existential state of lack of being. On one side it feels like real being, and the other side it feels like no being, because it's distinct from the Ribbono Shel Olam, right? So therefore the neshama has this incredible contradiction in it. Part of the neshama, okay, the ontological existential feeling of the neshama by virtue of its nature is that it is perfect, that it is a giver, that it is independent of everything. But the fact that it exists as distinct from the Ribbono Shel Olam and therefore is not the Ribbono Shel Olam, okay, it immediately has the feelings of awareness that it is dependent on God for perfection. It cannot do anything only if the Ribbono Shel Olam wants, right? And it has this complete loss or sense of self because it is not part of the Ribbono Shel Olam anymore. So the Nivra part is in contradiction to the Nimsa part. So therefore, the Neshama is now a Mekabel, a receiver, because its identity makes it a receiver, different than the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's not a Noisein, it's a Mekabel. Therefore, there's a lot of trouble now. Therefore, if the Ribbono Shel Olam gives that Neshama his Toiv, meaning his Shleimus, right, then it will always, it goes against its nature, which is to give, to be independent. And when the Ribbono Shel Olam gives it the Toiv, it's the obvious receiving, right, that rubs against its nature, you see? So you've got what's called, you know, sort of like an ontological lock. It's hard to go anywhere here. Once the Neshama has the same substance as the Ribbono Shel Olam, so it comes out that it has the same characteristics, which is independent, potency, which is perfection and so on, or the attribute of giving. By the fact that the Neshama is distinct from the Ribbono Shel Olam, it is now dependent, right? It is dependent, it is impotent in the sense that it can't do anything without the Ribbono Shel Olam. It is mechusa, deficient, and it's a makabel. So it has two wars with itself in the sense that it has two conflicting realities within itself, right? So even if the Ribbono Shel Olam gives it everything, there'll always be that nama diksufa, that feeling of inferiority, that feeling that it can't take being nothing, but in a sense it has the makabel, but then part of it doesn't rejects that makabel because it, according to its substance, is a mashpia, a giver. You see? So we come to the conclusion that nam niksufa is not originating creation. It's an existential state automatically that the neshama has by virtue of the fact that it is chelik l'kai mimal. It has that attribute of mashpia and noisim. So what does the Ribbono Shel Olam do? How are you going to correct that? So the Ribbono Shel Olam incredibly creates Olam Hazer, the physical world, which is a duplicate of the neshama's feelings. What does he do? He takes the neshama, he puts it into a body, right? That body automatically is dependent physically on everything else. You have to eat or else you die, right? So the body is physically deficient, right? And as a result of the physical deficiencies, it has real needs and drives, right? As a result of that. Those needs and drives automatically give you a sense of what? Dependency and impotency, because you're only a person, you know? Many times you can't get what you need. Right? That sense of dependency and impotency gives you a sense of what? Of inferiority. Because that limits you. And that limit detracts being, which is the feeling of inferiority. So Ribbono Shel Olam takes in a neshama, which anyway it has these feelings in that sense, and puts it into a physical matzav, which merely aggravates those feelings. Oh, but what's the difference? So Ribbono Shel Olam says, I want you now to work connected these ideas. What does that mean? And you understand part of last week's share in terms of the dimyon and so on. So what does the Ribbono Shel Olam do? He takes the neshama and he gives it a sense of free will. He allows bechir to the neshama, right? However that works, however that happened. What does free will mean? When you do something freely, it means you are a true cause. But this thing is happening because you are doing it. Well, that is the greatest source that you are a real being. That's potency. True cause is potency. Obviously, the feeling that I truly do something means that I am potent, I can do, which gives a sense of being. If I can do, obviously I must be something. So in other words, the Ribbono Shel Olam gives you free will, and the fact that you now can do things in this world, or you can achieve things on your own free will, is potency. You now can do, okay? Well, and that gives you a feel of being somebody. That idea of free will is a true cause, means you really are doing something. That's what's called doing. You really have power. That sense of power is a sense of the feeling that you get of self, or you are able to feel truly as if there's a real self. So the Rosh Hashanah, so you remove one aspect of limitation of being by being a real potent force. And then what's the other aspect? The other aspect of potency was what? Was dependency. How does the Rebbe Hashem remove your dependency? And here's where we really go back and you see the prophets of last week. You remember I said that when you do a mitzvah, any of the mitzvahs, and what depending on the mitzvah, the conflict that come out, right? The whole idea is that in the end, your entire act in the mitzvah is doing what? Is bringing the nachas ruach l'fonav. That's the whole end motive. That you're only doing the mitzvah to give him pleasure, right? What does giving him mean? Isn't that an act of independence? You're giving God something. In other words, you're taking your needs and you're saying, in other words, my needs are merely my way of giving you. So the truth is that you are giving, not taking. And you're taking merely to give. Because the only way you can give to the Baruch Hashem is by taking and saying that I will do it for your sake. So it comes out that the mitzvahs and the kavanah behind the mitzvahs is merely a way of getting you to be in the position of being a bestower, a giver, not a receiver. You see? In other words, when you do a mitzvah, you duplicate the reversion in five ways. Recall? The first idea was the fact that you freely are giving, because you have free will. The second idea is that you are truly giving. Why you are truly giving the reversion? The nachas ruach that he gets. Because God cannot force you to do the mitzvah freely. That obviously is a contradiction in terms. So that you are truly giving because there's truly an absence of that thing being done by your free will. You don't give God in the sense that he needs. There's no need on his part. But you truly give. In order for you to truly give, there must be an absence. And that's why you can give it. And the absence is that nothing can force you to do something with free will. So that is absence. So therefore, when you give the Rebbe Shalom the mitzvah for your sake only, I'll do it lishma, only for your sake, you are giving him something which is free and true. Because you cannot force somebody to give freely. It's a contradiction in terms. So you are truly fulfilling something which is absent in the universe, namely you're giving freely. So therefore you become a freely, you're giving freely, you're giving truly, you're giving completely, remember? And the ideas of motivation, that not only, remember when you want to do a mitzvah and the Rosh wants you to do a mitzvah, you both have motives for it. Like eating matzah because you love matzah and God wants to eat matzah. Okay, great, right? So you're saying, no, I will eat this matzah, I will remove all self-interest. So in other words, you are giving freely, you're giving truly, and you're giving completely. And you are giving, that's the act. And what are you giving? You're giving toiv, because nachas ruach l'fonav is his pleasure, kavayochol. Right? So therefore it comes out that the entire tzura of the mitzvah is nothing more than a way to get you to undo your feeling of always receiving. You're not receiving in Olam Hazeh. You're always giving. If you're going to do the job right, the avoider means to give. It does not mean to take. But you give by taking. You know, because that's the only way you really can do it. But the idea behind the taking, in other words, I'm going to eat matzah because I need the matzah to live, right? But I'm going to give it to you because that's what you want me to do. You want me to receive, so I should be healthy and do more mitzvahs. But the whole idea in my taking is only so you should have a nachas ruach l'fonav, right? So in other words, you come out, that dimyon between you and the Ribbono Shel, that true dimyon, where you are freely, truly, completely giving toiv, five ideas, and that's exactly what the Ribbono Shel does to you. He freely, truly, completely gives you toiv. That's Olam Haba, Mamash Adinin. That is a divine resemblance, a duplication of the Ribbono Shel.
How do you get?
Wait. And by doing that, you now have taken the entire posture of reception or recipiency, and you have now removed that or transformed it into giving the Ribbono Shel. So it comes out, what happens? It comes out that you now do not suffer the limitations imposed by dependence and recipiency, receiving. Because by the fact that you have bechira, free will, means that you are truly potent, you can do, and the fact that you've taken the task, the mitzvah itself, and you've given it to the Ribbono Shel Olam, removes you from the constant idea of reception. Okay? Now, the idea of what, in the end, when you truly are no more taking, and in other words, the ideas of impotence and the idea of dependency really are removed, because that's really what you work out of that. And you work out of that through recipiency. In other words, by taking the neshama and putting it into Olam Hazeh, which is the exact same thing anyway it feels over there, but by giving it a task and saying, look, you have free will, you have the real power to do, and you have the power to give it back all to me, okay, transforms the idea, the feelings that the neshama has in the sense that it's always receiving. So it comes out that the schar that the neshama gets in Olam Haba is the feelings of mamish. The toiv that it gets from the Ribbono Shel Olam is exactly due in that sense to its own sake, its own potency, and that the toiv in Olam Haba is almost like, I will receive schar in Olam Haba because you want me to be in Olam Haba. So in other words, it comes out that even Olam Haba, you are being nana mituvoi because that's what he wants. You see, so you never get away from the fact that you are always giving. But you must have an introductory place, which is Olam Hazeh. So Olam Hazeh allows you to work out the idea of always being potent, being able to do, and always transforming that which you receive into an act of giving. So therefore, in Olam Haba, when you are receiving the toiv of the Ribbono Shel Olam, what the neshama is then margish, and it has to retain identity, because it has to be a self that actually feels the toiv in Olam Haba. What the neshama is margish is that it truly is responsible for that which it's giving the Ribbono Shel Olam, which is the idea of potency. It is responsible because the Ribbono Shel Olam won't give you anything unless you earned it. So the neshama says, you know, feels that all this shlemus which I'm getting is only a result of my actions. And that's really what it is. That's the idea of din. Now you understand why din is so important. Because din is the tikkun of naam l'ksufa. So therefore the neshama feels that what I am receiving is truly a result of my actions. That's the greatest statement of potency of all. And I am giving the Ribbono Shel Olam what he is giving me in that sense. Because that's the nachas ruach that he's getting. So in that sense, you've converted the entire posture in Olam Hazeh and even of the neshama in terms of one who does not have potency and one who does not have independence. And that's the limitation, inferiority that you receive. And you've converted that into feelings of worth, respect, self-esteem, in the sense that, number one, I am doing something I can do, and I'm giving. When you give something, you always feel as if you're more worthwhile than when you're receiving. Because all of these things reflect the idea that you have true being. And therefore, this is what happens in Olam Haba. So we come back to the idea of last week, now why all the ideas of dimyan, of giving, the motive and so on, why it's so crucial to understand. So we come back to the idea, several ideas, that Hatova Shlema demands that fact that the Ribbono Shel Olam be the Toiv and also a Tikkun of Naam L'Ksufa. The second idea is that Naam L'Ksufa itself is an existential, automatic thing by virtue of the nature of the Neshama, and it's not a created idea. Again, the idea that every Neshama has a Nivron and Nimsa. The Nimsa is a substance, therefore it shares characteristics, or rather it has characteristics like the Ribbono Shel Olam, and it's a nivra in the sense of the identity of self, which is different. And that automatically creates this difficulty, that on one side it's an independent giving being, and on the other side, since it's not the Ribbono Shel Olam, it's a dependent taking being, in that sense. So Ribbono Shel Olam creates a matzav in Olam Hazeh, which duplicates the exact kind of matzav in Olam Haba, or rather, before the neshama comes down, where anything would feel immediately dependent because of the physical needs, and it would feel limited because it's the only human body, you can't immediately get what you want. And by working on that and turning it reverse, by being a cause where you take all actions of the universe, all mitzvahs and so on, which affects every sphere of one's life, and it comes out that you're taking each sphere and you are truly giving it to the Ribbono Shel, and therefore those feelings of impotency and dependency are removed. So therefore one does not have that detraction of being in Olam Haba. This is a possible solution. I don't know if it's the only solution or even if it's a real solution, but at least it deals with certain profound ideas and tries to relate them in terms of Nam Dik Sufa.